This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Laura Bono joins us on the long line from her home in North Carolina. Laura is the founder of the National Autism Association. Good afternoon, Laura.
Hi, Coy.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
I'm so glad
you could to join us on this program. I have a million things to talk to you about, and I don't really know where to start. The best place is always, the way I like to do it, is just to introduce yourself to the listeners, Laura Bono one-on-one, and why you, how you got involved with autism at all.
Autism was not on my radar screen, as you would imagine most people, they don't think about it. I had two beautiful daughters, twin daughters that were born in 1987. And then 2 years later, my son, Jackson, was born in 1989. And, being a good parent that I thought I was doing, I, did all the right things for Jackson, including getting his vaccines that he needed. And, it was shortly after his 16-month vaccinations that I started seeing Jackson's health go down. A normally very happy, healthy baby, reaching all of his milestones, fun kid, social, talking, then suddenly started withdrawing. And we just didn't think of autism. I was just thinking at first, you know, he's got a brain tumor. I mean, all those horrible things that you think of. And I lived in Fairfax, actually, at the time, and we got an appointment with Children's Hospital and got a diagnosis only 4 months later of autism. And during those 4 months, his health deteriorated considerably. Jackson was having diarrhea. He was projectile vomiting his food. He couldn't hold down anything. He was just becoming more and more sickly. He wasn't sleeping. So a baby who had slept through the night since he was like 3 weeks old was suddenly not sleeping, and being up all hours of the night became hyperactive. Then, of course, the language left him, and he just became a shell of him, his former self. And so my husband and I had all of the depression that comes with losing a child. I've never been in the situation, thank God, that I have never been in the situation of actually having to bury Jackson or any child, but I know what losing one is, at least the one that I had, and then the one that was left didn't want to have anything to do with me, you know, wouldn't look at me, wouldn't respond, pushed me away, you know, didn't want to have anything to do with anyone, screamed, you know, it was a terrible existence. And we just started getting as much information as we could and going to the doctors and saying, could his vaccines have anything to do with this? And we were getting, you know, the answer of, oh, no, you know, vaccines wouldn't do this. And I think at the time, in 1990, which is when, you know, he was finally diagnosed, because he was 17 months old at that point, I don't think that that was anything that they would think would have caused autism, even though we said it was happening right after the vaccines. But in our hearts, because vaccines have just a major impact on the immune system, my husband, Scott, and I felt like our child was now becoming allergic to the world. Something was desperately wrong with his immune system. He was allergic to foods. You know, as I said, the diarrhea, the vomiting. He was very sick, and so we felt like it was vaccines. And you know, we looked into everything we could do for his immune system. And you fast forward all these years later, everything that we've ever done for Jackson, including therapy, you know, we've done all sorts of, you know, tutoring and everything to help him, of course, speech therapy and OT and, you know, you name it, we've done it. But everything has gotten better as we find another medical treatment that will help Jackson with his immune system.
We're talking with Laura Bono, one of the founders of the National Autism Association. She joins us on the long line from her home in North Carolina. Laura, I know... I know exactly of what you speak. Regular listeners to this program will know that I, my wife Allison and I have 4-year-old twins and, boy-girl twins, and, my son was diagnosed with autism, shortly after his second birthday, and it was very, just classic, autism. It was just all of a sudden one day, I'll never forget, I turned to Allison and I said, Allison, he doesn't play anymore. He stopped talking, he stopped smiling, he literally stopped playing. And it was shocking at first, like, well, is he sick? What's wrong? And then when you start realizing something really seriously has happened to this child, and to say that it breaks your heart doesn't even get close to actually the feeling that you go through. It is like a death.
It is. Many parents have described it that way. And, I mean, certainly in my opinion, like I said, I've never had to deal with that, but I only can imagine, and I certainly, regardless, you know, I certainly went through a huge depression, but then, you know, I turned that inside out and said, okay, I've got to find something to work, and I did, you know, so every medical treatment we ever did worked for Jackson. But I tell you, more and more, with the internet, there were more parents, like you, Coy, who were saying, you know, things like, well, my son regressed, and mostly it's boys, and I'm sure your listeners who've heard you say that, you know, it's 4-1 boys over girls. You know, we just tried to do everything we could, and the more that we heard parents saying these things, the more that our story was very common, that we had a normal child that regressed in a family where there's no autism. You know, there's no autism in your family. There's no autism in my family. No one knew what it was. And so, you know, for it to suddenly appear, and so going to NAA, which is where I helped found with several other parents, we just found that there was a growing number of disenfranchised, I like to think that the parents are, a group of parents that did not have an organization that was helping them advocate for the research and the political agenda that they needed for autism in the 90s and 2000s. I mean, you know, the old paradigm of hopeless and lifelong with several of the autism groups, and our autism group, National Autism Association, was more about biomedical. It was about these children are treatable. You know, we just have to get the physicians to move along and understand that it's treatable, and you all have a great physician in your area, Liz Mumper, that works with autistic children, and she's fabulous. And
mm-hmm.
She's
one of the best in the country, yeah.
Yeah, she certainly understands that autism is treatable. And so we started NAA in 2003, and it's growing in membership, and we work very hard on science funding, on the political issues, the children's legal rights. We want to help suffering families and children now with treatments. We help families that are down on their luck that can't pay for the treatments. And so far we've raised and we've paid for over $400,000 in research to Burbacher and to Dr. Steve Walker and Mady Hornick. So we're working really hard to fund these bright researchers that are trying to find answers for our children.
We're talking with Laura Bono, one of the founders of the National Autism Association. She joins us on the long line from her home in North Carolina. Laura, what have you learned when you started down this path that none of us want to be on when our child is diagnosed with something as horrific as autism? What is it that you have learned that you now share with other families like my own?
Well, first of all, that they're not alone, and sadly, there's an epidemic of parents and children that are going through this. And so if you first understand that it is at epidemic levels, then you scientifically must come to the conclusion that it is an environmental trigger, because you cannot have a genetic epidemic, period. It's just not possible. So what we have to ask ourselves is, why are so many children sick? Why do so many children have autism? And we have to look to the environment. Now, as many people, as I've already shared, and many parents of autistic children will tell you, and I hear the story over and over and over, is that it was after vaccines. But we just didn't know what, and we couldn't figure it out. And then over time, We have found, in fact, 1999, the FDA released a report that said that they had accidentally given children in the 90s too much mercury in their vaccines. It's called thimerosal, and it was over the levels that were approved for a grown man to have, and these children were getting much more than that. And so they asked the pharmaceutical industry, so rather than pulling all of the vaccines off the shelves that had this excess mercury, like we would do for a baby food or a bicycle helmet, those were left on the shelves, and the doctors unknowingly continued to give this to children. But we got a hold of that report, and you know, several parents in Safe Minds, which is another wonderful advocacy group, began looking at it, and they started totaling up the mercury. Well, the EPA limit for mercury is 0.1 micrograms per kilo. So for a baby of, say, 20 pounds, they should only be getting about 0.9 micrograms. And these children were getting upwards of, 50, 62 micrograms at each visit that they would go to the doctor. So, my son, when he did, right after he regressed, as I figured it up, Jackson had gotten over 50 times the EPA limit for mercury. So therefore, when I started looking at his symptoms, just like some of these parents early on in 2000, and you look at, he has immune dysfunction, he has gastrointestinal problems, he has high mercury levels, he has endocrine problems, sensory problems, he's behind socially to the point where he doesn't even know people are in the room, he has language difficulties, he can't hardly speak. When you put those symptoms side by side, they're identical to mercury. So there was no doubt in my mind, and then I got it confirmed by a doctor who did a challenge on my son, and this is what I recommend to do to anyone, any child out there that you have an autism diagnosis and you really want to start treating your child biomedically and you think this may have something to do with it. You go to a doctor like Liz Mumper in your area, and you get a mercury challenge, and the mercury just poured out of Jackson as well as other metals. So I'm certain that that has been a big factor for him, and as the metals leave his body, Jackson gets better. And to me, there's no better cause and effect than my son is getting better, and he's 17. And the younger children that are starting this immediately at 2 and 3 and 4 years old, by the time, 4 or 5 years go by and they've been chelating, no one ever even knows they were autistic. So there are recovered children now, and it's happening every day.
And chelation, Laura, explain that for folks.
Okay, well, it is an FDA-approved way of pulling metals from your body. And actually, some of the chelators that we have now are very old. They were developed back in World War II, sometimes from, machinery that the World War II soldiers would get, around, and perhaps they would get heavy metal poisoning, even lead from bullets or whatever. And these chelators were developed, and then, of course, they've been at FDA for all these years, FDA approved. You give the child either orally or with a suppository, or you could do IV, but most parents don't do that with the children.
Cream.
Pardon me?
Or the cream on the arm.
The cream on the arm, thank you, by transdermal. And so it doesn't hurt the child in any way, and you watch to see if any good metals in their bodies, like zinc and copper and selenium, these things can be, these nutrients can be also taken out by the chelation. So basically, you chelate, and then for several days you replace the good nutrients in your child's body, and then you chelate again, and this can go on for years, but parents see a huge difference in their children, and that long list that I said, the endocrine problems start going away, the gastrointestinal complaints begin to go away, their immune system gets better. All of these things get better, including social skills and language skills, as these children release mercury from their bodies.
So if I hear you right, and this has been the experience at our house, that the way to understand this, and this is what's so frustrating with a lot of doctors, is because the vast majority of doctors, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, the IOM, they refuse to accept the evidence, which suggests very, very loudly and very clearly that what we think of as autism and we call autism is in fact better understood as a heavy metal poisoning.
Right. And in fact, well, you're speaking to someone, being somebody that has actually been thrown out of the AAP convention. But last October, we actually paid, or one of our parents paid $10,000 for a booth, and we had streaming video there of recovered children before and after chelation. We had doctors there willing to talk to these AAP people coming through to say, if you have an autistic child in your practice back in, you know, whoever, where, Kansas, you know, here is the protocol that we're using to help some of these children. It's making a miracle difference in a lot of these children's lives. And I was evidently I was listed as being as working at the booth, and there were about six or seven parents that weren't allowed in, so we were escorted out. Here we have our nice little suits on, and we were escorted out by the AAP. So you have to wonder what is scaring them so much that they don't want to have parents or even physicians talking to other doctors about how to help autistic children. All FDA-approved treatments. Nothing wacko, just helping these children biomedically, and the children are getting better.
Yeah, when you approach the autism as if it is heavy metal poisoning, and you treat these kids for heavy metal poisoning, they get better.
Right.
And this is what so many mainstream physicians and the American Academy of Pediatrics, they don't want to know this.
No. And you know, it's interesting. I think that many doctors just don't know. They don't realize their leadership has taken on this mindset. They're holding on to the old paradigm. Things change slowly. But I tell you, I'm heartened by not the CDC, because I think they're still stuck in the old paradigm and they're continuing to give thimerosal-containing vaccines. But the NIH is actually the people who are actually looking at this research, who are in charge of collecting it. They are, I think, Coy, they're turning a corner. And I think just because everybody for a long time thought that autism was just, maybe if they just squeezed their eyelids tighter, it was just going to go away. And these children are coming out of the woodwork, and it's not stopping. And what are they going to do? And because the CDC has not taken all the thimerosal out of the vaccines, because they're now saying to pregnant women and babies that they need to get flu shots, which have 25 micrograms of thimerosal, which, by the way, you need to weigh over 500 pounds to process that much mercury, they're still putting it in those shots, and autism rates are still up. So, but I think the real research, you know, the NIH researchers are realizing, and they're updating the research matrix now at NIH, and you'll be happy to know that many environmental factor research projects are being put in.
We are honored to have with us this hour Laura Bono, one of the founders of the National Autism Association. Laura, before we continue our discussion, because of course I still have a million questions, we got a lot of calls actually during this previous break, folks wanting websites and contact information, and what is the website for the National Autism Association?
It's www.nationalautism.org.
nationalautism.org.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, your contact information can be found on that website.
That's right. And there are several of us listed there, and you can find me through that.
And, of course, there's also another organization you mentioned, safeminds.org.
Mm-hmm. Safeminds.org. And that's S-A-F-E-M-I-N-D-S, all one word.
Right. And there's also putchildrenfirst, all one word, .org, which also has a lot of information there available that you can get. And there's a book about this entire subject by the nation's top investigative reporter, David Kirby, who has been a guest on this program. And the book is Evidence of Harm. That's Evidence of Harm. And I believe he's got a website, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and it's evidenceofharm.com.
Oh, well, there you go. That's pretty simple. And they are, if I'm not mistaken as well, they're making that book into a movie as we speak.
That's right. They're working on it now. The screenwriter is working on it, and they've already hired directors and producers. And so maybe by January, February, the book will be, or the screenplay will be finished, and they will start pulling together actors.
And, of course, folks should know that you and your husband figure prominently in that book, and we wouldn't be surprised to actually have actors playing y'all in the movie.
Maybe. You know, it's hard to say how they do. I understand it's movie magic. That's what the guy has said. So we'll see. It may be that they end up with a composite family that this all happens to. And, you know, so I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. But
yeah,
that's all in the discussion phase at this point.
The phone lines are open, folks. If you have a comment or a question for Laura Bono of the National Autism Association, we invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070. Laura, one thing what I was thinking about in the break that people often don't know, and it's what Allison always comes back to when she and I end up talking about it. She says, people don't understand that this mercury that's in our vaccines and was in great volume back in the 90s and the early 2000s was never even approved by the FDA. It's never been researched. It's never been tested. It was grandfathered in way back in the 30s. And what's so strange is it goes against everything the FDA stands for when they say, you know, if it's going to go in our medicine, it's going to go in our food or whatever, we're going to test it, we're going to make sure it's okay. And yet they let this thimerosal, this ethyl mercury, they let it in our medicine without ever even testing it.
Yeah, it's called, for any of the medical people out there, that it was GRAS, G-R-A-S, generally recognized as safe. And it was grandfathered in, and as early, though, as 1992, that some of our FOIA documents show, Merck had asked consultants to look into the vaccines, and several of the consultants came back to them in this memo saying, you've got too much thimerosal, too much mercury in the shots. Well, that was in 1992. And so it was the Maurice Hillman. He was the father of vaccination. So here you've got Maurice Hillman, father of vaccination, telling Merck in a memo in 1992 that you are giving children too much mercury, and Merck didn't change anything they did, nor did anybody else. But the Russians did. The Russians took it out of their vaccines. Swedes took it out of theirs. And yet Americans continued, and of course the British buy from us, so they continued to give children too much thimerosal all throughout the 90s, and then, as you know, as we've mentioned, then didn't pull it from the shelves. And now they say it's in trace amounts. Well, show me the science that says trace amounts are okay. And what is a trace? Because they don't say how much it is. So, can I look in the dictionary, in the encyclopedia, and find out what trace means, how many micrograms that is? I have no idea.
And yet when mothers and dads share these concerns with their doctors, with their baby's doctors, 9 times out of 10, a doctor's going to say, oh, don't worry about it.
Well, and, most kids are fine. I'm sure Jackson, there were several little boys his age that got the same vaccines, and they're fine, or maybe they have ADD, they maybe are on somehow on the spectrum, but they are not as severe as he is, and that goes back to the individual susceptibility. And maybe your listeners may know about that, maybe they don't, but this is important to talk about because it is why some children who get these same vaccines are fine. And where other children, like my son and your son, and see, your daughter got them, she was fine.
Yep, she was right there, shot for shot.
Right. So individual susceptibility, and that means basically you could have 100 coal miners and only 3 of them get black lung. Why is that? Well, they worked beside each other all their lives, but 3 were more susceptible to that. We've all seen 80 and 90-year-olds smoking. They've been smoking for 70 years. They don't get lung cancer, but someone else does. It goes back to that susceptibility, but it needs a trigger. Every susceptibility needs a trigger. And what they found with these children is they're very low in glutathione, whatever is not, producing glutathione in their body, and that is an amino acid that helps clear heavy metals out of your body. If you are low in that for whatever reason, then you're going to have a problem with getting mercury out of your body. They've also found that a lot of children had been on antibiotics prior to the regression. We now know through research that when you are on antibiotics, it goes through the same pathway as toxins in your body. So these children aren't going to detoxify as much. And if you get a load of mercury shot into your leg and you can't detoxify it, it's going to travel to your brain. It's that simple. And it either travels in a small amount which means maybe they're ADD and ADHD, or it travels in a large amount and they become even more severe into autism.
Laura Bona is our guest, one of the founders of the National Autism Association. That's nationalautism.org, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And update us about what's going on in Washington, because I know you and many other groups have been working for years to try to get Congress to finally do something about this. They've dragged their feet and they seem like they're just going to do whatever the pharmaceutical companies tell them to do, by and large.
Yes. Well, you know, when a congressman or a senator sits down with you and says, well, we can't do a lot because, you know, and then they kind of look around and go, pharmaceutical companies own this town. And you just are kind of, you look at them and go, do you realize what you're saying to me? You know, that's fascism. You know, when you're admitting to me that you can't make a move without a pharmaceutical company blessing, that's pretty bad.
And you have had elected leaders in Washington.
Yeah.
I have, too. I mean, I've had them look right at me and say,
yeah,
there's very little we can do. The pharmaceutical industry is extremely powerful.
They outnumber us, is what they say. And, you know, and I just, you know, I certainly think that somebody needs to stand up to them. And luckily, we are making inroads. And there are two things that I want to talk to your listeners about. One is the Combating Autism Bill, and the other is that Safe Minds and National Autism Association are going to be presenting our suggested research projects to the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee at NIH, which is groundbreaking that these two groups are going to be able to tell NIH where the autism research needs to go. So it's fabulous that we've gotten on that agenda.
And that's never happened before that
no.
The NIH would ask
no.
groups like yours.
No, November 17th.
Wow. So that's very, very soon. And that this is unprecedented.
It is. It is. So that, you know, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm smiling. So that's a great sign. It is all about environmental factors. They have realized, they know, they fought it for a long time, and now they know that it is definitely caused by something in the environment. You know, I have my thoughts, but, you know, I'm just saying it needs to be looked at. You know, maybe if the truth doesn't come out to be what I think, that's fine. Just someone research this. Help my child. Help Coy's child. Help other children out there. And so finally they're researching these things, and we've got a list we've already presented to the head of NIH and some of the agencies there, but we're going to actually be able to put it in the record and present this to the IACC committee in November.
That's really exciting.
Tell
folks, what is the Combating Autism Bill? What does it do, and where is it right now in the machinery of Congress?
Well, the Combating Autism Bill is a disease-specific bill that is for autism, and nothing really ever gets a disease-specific bill unless you're at epidemic levels. For instance, the Ryan White AIDS bill. You know, AIDS was at epidemic levels. It needed to have specific funding mechanisms going on within NIH. So therefore, the Combating Autism Bill went into the Senate. It had a lot of input by the community, by regular parents, by autism organizations, by doctors, researchers. We thought it was a wonderful bill. It actually even specifically says in colloquy, which is what senators would talk about on the Senate floor, that no stone is to be overturned, including looking into vaccines, mercury, any preservatives, viral overload of these children. So we felt like we were we really had a wonderful bill. NIH was excited about it, and it's providing $900 million for over 5 years to autism. And just to give you an idea, AIDS gets $900 million per year. So this bill, in the grand scheme of things, $900 million over 5 years, was a small amount, but yet it's 10 times what we're getting now.
When I interviewed David Kirby on this program, he mentioned something I'd never really thought about before, but he said, you know, we've got one in about 160 kids now who are suffering, tragically suffering. And if you folks out there, if you know a family suffering that's dealing with autism, you know every day has a tragedy in it. And he said, if one in 160 kids was being kidnapped or was disappearing off of playgrounds every day in this country, it would be you. The president would be talking about it on television every day.
Yeah.
And it would be the only thing that the media was covering. They'd be talking about it. We'd be looking for these kids. And Congress would be saying, we will spare no expense. We will find these children and we will find out what the hell is going on.
Right. Well,
and yet
you know,
that's
going back to, you know, the epidemic, avian flu last year, all the hype of avian flu got $4 billion, with a B, dollars. Devoted to it. So, in the grand scheme of things, autism deserves this money. The children need it. It is the number one childhood disorder over everything. In fact, if you add childhood cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, and diabetes, all, by the way, you know, also, all those have gone up as well. But if you add all childhood disorders, those three combined, autism beats all of them. So it is the number one childhood disorder. It is still at epidemic levels, and it deserves this bill. This bill is basically three-tiered. It's research, treatment, and oversight. And when I say oversight, it's just not giving a bunch of money to NIH, but it's actually saying you will look into immune dysfunction, gastrointestinal problems, endocrinology of the children. You will gather together the records of all of these children across the country in doctor's offices, and you'll try to find a common thread. What biomarkers can we start looking at to see if a child who is born today, if we could look and see, does that child have a biomarker that will indicate this child's going to have a problem with autism, then we can start immediately to make sure that that child stays away from any environmental factors that could be causing it. So this is a major step forward, and yet, so it passed the Senate. And it passed by unanimous consent in the Senate. So there is no doubt in my mind, Congress and the Senate certainly know that this is a huge problem. They know they need to put money toward it. And then we get to Congress in the House, and Representative Joe Barton from Texas, who is the chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, is refusing to put the bill through his committee. And the bill, the way the House works, the bill has to go through the committee in order to get to the House floor. And this is even adding insult to injury. There are more sponsors on this bill in the House than is needed for a majority. So the majority of the House have actually signed on as co-sponsors to this bill. So basically it means if it were to hit the House floor today, it would be voted upon. $900 million would go to NIH after Appropriations Committee to give us the relief that these children need. And Joe Barton, one lone man, is saying no.
And what's his motivation?
Well, you know, he says he doesn't like disease-specific bills. Well, I'm sure he voted for avian flu last year at $4 billion. We'd have to look at his records. You know, I don't know if he ever voted for AIDS. But to me, you know, to say that and say that, well, NIH will waste the money. I mean, these type of comments that are coming from him aren't making any sense.
Now, how can folks get in touch with him or and encourage him to get this bill out into Congress so it passes?
Here is the I'm going to give you one phone number because there's three guys that you really need to call, but this one phone number is the House switchboard. It is 202-225-3121. And the calls you need to make is Chairman Barton, again from Texas. There is Majority Leader Boehner, he is from Ohio, and House Speaker Dennis Hassert. And those three people could make a difference. Speaker Hassert could say, all right, Congressman Barton's not going to take it out of the committee, but I'm going to protect children, which, you know, that's questionable after the last few weeks of, you know, his history, but I'm going to protect children, I'm going to help autistic children, and I'm putting it on the House floor as House Speaker.
That number again is 202-225-3121. Let's go to the phones. Dwayne's in Charlottesville. Dwayne, thanks for the call. You're on with Laura Bono.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, Coy, I appreciate the attention you've given to this topic. As a new parent, I'm very interested in it. So my question is, if your organization, or maybe you could point us to information for new parents who have young children that they're considering the vaccination schedule before them. If there's a varied schedule that you'd recommend, or any procedures beyond what I'm already looking at, which is to insist on a single dose vaccination.
Well, the websites that were mentioned before, Put Children First, there's one called GenerationRescue.org. I think they have some things on it. www.909shot, that's the National Vaccine Information Center. They have a very good website. And, of course, NAA, Safe Minds. Coy, can you think of any others? But my recommendation is to you, as a new parent, is to hold off, really, as long as you can. And when you do the single doses and you do it one at a time, you absolutely have to look at the package insert, because we're finding that when parents insist on looking at the packaging insert, it has thimerosal in it, and sometimes at the full 25 micrograms. So that's a concern. Also know that don't give anything to a child that is sick. No vaccines to a child that's been sick or is sick, that has been on an antibiotic for a couple of months. There's studies showing, as I mentioned earlier, that they can't process the mercury. With that, give them plenty of vitamins several weeks prior. I mean, know that when your child goes in to get a measles shot or a measles, mumps, rubella shot, that you are gearing your child up to get three diseases in one day. And so would anybody walk into an office and go, oh, here's three diseases, and oh, by the way, you haven't had any vitamins, and you haven't been eating well, and you've been sickly, you've had a cold? Of course not. And so that's, we have to get into that mindset that we are overwhelming our children's immune systems when we give them these vaccines, in my opinion.
Laura Bono, thank you for the call, Duane. Laura Bono, one of the founders of the National Autism Association. The website's, again, folks, nationalautism.org, putchildrenfirst.org. GenerationRescue.org, SafeMinds.org, and the switchboard to the U.S. Representative's Office, Congress, is 202-225-3121. And the guy from Texas, again, that's holding up this legislation?
Joe Barton. B-A-R-T-O-N.
What a jerk.
Yeah.
Laura, thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate it. And stay in touch.
Okay. Thanks so much, Coy, for having me on.
Absolutely. This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.